Welcome to Metaphysical Romp with Reverend Paul Hasselbeck and co-host Reverends Bill Holton and Cher Holton. Discover practical applications to bring 21st century metaphysics to work in your life. Here's your host, Paul Hasselbeck.
Welcome to another edition of Metaphysical Romp. This is the Reverend Dr. Paul Hasselbeck. I'm delighted to be with you. I'm here with my friends, and yes, it's another beautiful day in my consciousness. Say hello, friends.
Hello, this is your friend, Reverend Dr. Cher Holton, and it is another beautiful day in my consciousness.
And this is the Reverend Dr. Bill Holton, and it is very definitely another beautiful, beautiful day in my consciousness as well. As you already know, if you've heard our podcast before, Cher and I have a hybrid unity ministry called the Unity Center for Universal, YOUniversalProsperity.com.
Which you can get to very quickly by going to UCFYP.com.
Yeah, and I have my podcast, PaulHasselbeck.com, where you can find the absolute word, and you can also find my calendar when I'm doing classes and things like that. And speaking around the country from the comfort of my home. Am I delighted or what?
Right? Absolutely, yes. We're all becoming righty. Zoom professionals, aren't we?
Zoom. Or we're Zoom-alicious, let's say.
Zoom-alicious.
Ooh. In the Zoomiverse. Okay, so the we've been going this continuing theme. This is part five based on Bill's white light paper, Free Will and Free Won't, and we're off and running, and wow, this has really been an interesting series for me, and I hope it has been for you too, our wonderful listeners. And Cher is our fantastic reader, and so take it away, Cher.
All right, yes, we've really enjoyed this because it's taking a look at not only what our thoughts are, which we have our own, lots of those, but it also is looking at what scientists are telling us and yes, how they are changing in as they change their views as well. Today, we're going to pick up where we were at the end of the last show, and just we kind of introduced Sam Harris in our last show, who's one of the most prominent neuroscientists and writers, and we're just going to kind of back up and review what he said again, because we didn't get a chance to really talk about it. He wrote in a 2012 book called Free Will. Interesting. It's got a great cover, by the way. Y'all need to go look at that. Alludes to the fantasy of conscious choice. And I love that phrase, the fantasy of conscious choice.
Oh my God, that didn't impact me last time like it just did. The fantasy of conscious choice. Oops.
Let that, if everybody ponder that for a minute. He believes that there's absolutely no such thing as free will. So we know already from our discussions in some of our gatherings that that sentence alone will raise everybody's hackles, or a lot of people's hackles.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So let's quote him and see what he has to say. So Harris says, we need our beliefs to track what is true. Illusions, no matter how well-intentioned, will always hold us back. For example, we currently use the threat of imprisonment as a crude tool to persuade people not to do bad things. But if instead accept that human behavior arises from neurophysiology, he argues, then we can better understand what is really causing people to do bad things, despite the threat of punishment. And once we know that, then how to stop them. We need, he insists, to know what levers we can pull as a society to encourage people to be the best version of themselves they can be.
I am curious, are we going to go on and say what those levers are, or is that left to our imagination?
And what's interesting, he's really just using that as an example. And I from what I recall from reading this before, he doesn't really go into it. It's more like, here's one example of what we need to do, but he doesn't unfold that or unpack it in any way. Because he goes on and says here, what's more, as ordinary people come to better understand how their brains work, many of the problems documented by Vohs, who we talked about last week, and others will dissipate. Determinism, he says, does not mean that conscious awareness and deliberative thinking serve no purpose, certain kinds of action require us to become conscious of a choice, to weigh arguments and appraise evidence. True, if we were put in exactly the same situation again, and this is what makes my mind go crazy. He says 100 times out of 100, we would make the same decision, just like rewinding a movie and playing it again. But the act of deliberation, the wrestling with facts and emotions that we feel is essential to our nature, is nonetheless real.
Yeah, so that's just reinforcing some ideas we've had. The choice is made before we're aware of it, then we become aware of it, and once we're aware of it, we can wrestle with it.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right.
Which also adds to the power of having options, like adding to the choices that we, the opportunities of which choice we'll make. And I feel like the more valid information we feed in, that becomes part of that subconscious choice in the future, right?
Right, I mean, exactly.
I would hope so.
That would help.
Yeah, so I think what happens with computers, it happens with people. Junk in, junk out.
That's right.
And that's just the way it works.
Yeah. Because I love going back to what he said earlier, illusions, no matter how well-intentioned, will always hold us back. And that's like when we read people or listen to some of the crazy woo-woo stuff that people put out there, it might sound great, but if it's not really true, it hurts, but we've got to take off that mask and say, hey, oh, that's a poor choice of words right now in these days, take off the mask. We've got to remove the blinders, if you will, and say, you know, I've got to know what's true. And
well, we're seeing it today.
What good does it do to believe in it?
What's happening in popular culture, people state something that they say is true, and the science says it's not, but the people who listen don't know the science, so they take it to be true. Yeah. And that's the junk in. So what do you get? Junk out. And the masks in this era of coronavirus is a perfect example, is that people have been told the masks, actually, we started out saying the masks weren't effective because they were saving them for the medical people. And then it progressed, you want to wear a mask, right? To protect others in case you're sick. And then just last week, I read something that I've been saying all along, and that is that the mask also protects me from other people's
germs.
Yeah.
Yep,
it's absolutely. It's just logical. I mean, anyway.
Yeah. And you know,
you got to erase the old data so the new one can be supreme.
And if it would be presented with facts that people could hear and know that that was true, then it's not hard to replace, because it's not like we were lied to before on that. It's just that new information emerges with as they study. But I'm reminded of back in the 50s, and I just remember because I had done some research on marketing, different types of marketing techniques. And in the 50s, there was a technique called junkologic, which is still alive and well today. Junkologic is where you take your product and something totally unrelated, but people like and believe in, and mush them together as if one affects the other, which is why they have these wonderful dogs or babies on medication advertisements. My brother always said, if you see the dog, you know that they're talking in the small print or in the words about death. This will cause death. So they show a dog jumping around because then your attention is drawn to that. And it has no logical connection, but people make the logical leap. And it's called junkologic marketing.
Wow.
And I think we're hearing it right now.
We're hearing it a lot.
When people say more tests mean more
cases.
If you do more tests, you're going to have more cases. Well, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But, you know, it's that junkologic.
Well, so it is true that to do more tests, you're going to have more cases.
You're going to identify more cases.
Exactly.
There's a difference. It's not causing more cases.
Right.
It's identifying more. So the number of identified cases goes up. It doesn't mean you're causing more cases.
Right. Correlation, not causation.
Right.
Bill, it looks like you've been trying to get a word in. Did you want to say
something? No.
Sorry.
I'm just listening because it's neat what we're saying here, although I did think of one thing that we can caution people on, since we are in a pandemic mania, is that one thing we caution people not to do is take breaking news, the first time you hear some news, and they call it breaking news, too seriously and get upset over it, because breaking news doesn't have all the facts yet.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get the facts behind the news. So wait till after the third, fourth, fifth time you've heard it, when more information comes in.
Good idea. Good idea.
And see, so the more we hear this and absorb it, then when we make choices in the future about what we believe or how we approach something, we have new data added to our knowledge base.
Yeah, so as our subconscious mind continues making decisions, there's new data that we're not even conscious of at the moment that it's using. Right. Yes.
So I think that's why it's useful, even though we may see that the science says we've already made the choice, those choices get wiser as we add more logical, good data.
Agreed.
If we add junk, those choices are going to just keep being stupid.
Correct.
Okay, so we're continuing with Harris. One more paragraph. Harris says that people often confuse determinism with fatalism. And we do hear that a lot when we start talking about free will. People automatically think fatalism. So he says determinism is the belief that our decisions are part of an unbreakable chain of cause and effect. Fatalism, on the other hand, is the belief that our decisions don't really matter because whatever is destined to happen will happen.
Oh boy, do we live in a world of that in New Thought.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everything's happening as it's supposed to happen.
Yep. Yeah.
And don't you get tired of hearing that? I just sometimes want to scream when I hear that. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
I do, you know.
And we'll probably take some hits for saying that. I mean, some from our listeners, they're going to be saying, but wait a minute, isn't that true? And we don't believe that is true. Yeah. Okay, Bruce Waller, a philosophy professor at Youngstown State University, has a new book called Restorative Free Will. In it, he writes that we should focus on our ability in any given setting to generate a wide range of options for ourselves and to decide among them without external constraint. And I love that. For Waller, it simply doesn't matter that these processes are underpinned by a causal chain of firing neurons. In his view, free will and determinism are not the opposites they are often taken to be. They simply describe our behavior at different levels.
I think it's important that we remind people that the way this stuff is being written is in the context that physical activity creates consciousness. And we're not completely in that camp.
No, we're not.
You know, I think there's, here again, I don't think there's correlation. And so this whole firing of neurons and all of that, I get a little bit uneasy about it. And how does a physical thing give rise to something that's non-physical and as complex as consciousness? Mm-hmm. Not that it's been worked out, but there's certainly been a lot of philosophies and points of view that have been put forward. You know, dualism is there's a physical brain and there's consciousness and there's separate things. And we fall someplace in between. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure where I fall right now. But this is sounding more like materialism, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Materialism, not anything that philosophy is. Well, both points of view exist, I guess. I should give that credit. Okay, enough said, Paul.
No, but that point's well taken.
Yeah, and I think this paragraph, I guess I like it because of my beliefs that I already hold.
Okay, so we've right? got the, yeah.
Yeah, that take a place. But I like that he says it's important to get a wide range of options for ourselves and go through the process of choosing. I mean, we actually have to do that because that's what moves it from the inner choice to the action that we take.
And, yes.
And going back to the powers, we've got that power of will. Where is that coming from, the conscious or the subconscious, that power of will being activated?
Well, so if we consciously activate it, then the decision to consciously activate it is coming from our subconscious mind. Mm-hmm. If we, you know, here we are back to this weird circular kind of
argument.
It's because if we don't know about it, because not everybody realizes about the power, so they call them different things.
Yeah.
So if we don't know we have the power of will, how do we consciously call it into action? And yet it has to be, from what we believe, we do have to activate that because that's our little director that makes our choices.
Well, so I don't think it's as clear cut as that. because even before we know they exist, they are operating.
Absolutely.
We are using them. And so the combination of the power of will, the power of understanding, and the power of wisdom are essentially our knower, our chooser, and our evaluator. That's been happening our whole life. Mm-hmm. What studying the 12 powers does is now make me conscious that that's what's going on. And so from a conscious point of view, I can operate them.
Well, let's take a look at the Waller's next statement, a really quick look at that, because that relates to what we're just saying right now.
Okay, good.
Yeah, and I have it marked a different color because it raised big question marks in red flags.
It's so good to have the author in the room, isn't it?
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see where Waller goes with this. And so here it is.
Yet Waller's account of free will still leads to a very different view of justice and responsibility than most people hold today. That's what you're talking about, right?
Well,
the next sentence. Yeah, here comes the one I have highlighted with a big question mark. No one has caused himself. No one chose his genes or the environment into which he was born. Therefore, no one bears ultimate responsibility for who he is and what he does.
So there is a case of philosopher stretching the meaning of the data.
Yep, and he gets very materialistic in that assessment.
Yes.
He makes a statement, no one has caused him or herself. No one chose or chooses his or her genes or the environment. Well, if you believe in something Cahill Gibran said years ago when he says, we don't come to our parents, we come through them.
Yep.
Well, Gibran would say, well, we do choose the genes or the environment because we choose these two particular people as portals to enter into the human experience.
Yeah, so that is a common point of view in the circles we run in.
Yep.
And even if we don't choose our parents, we still have the impact of the genes and the environment, but that doesn't mean that we are victims of it.
Exactly.
That's right. And we are learning more and more how we do have a lot of control over how we can upregulate and downregulate those genes.
I always go to those extreme examples like, well, Oprah Winfrey's a classic present day one. And if she was all about her genes and her environment, she couldn't be the billionaire she is today.
That's right.
Right? And so, I'm not sure I'm grooving with this.
No, but it's in there to give us perspective for what's to come, of course.
Of course.
In terms of free will, what it is and what it isn't, and is it free will or free won't?
Right.
So do we think we can do another paragraph?
Let's see what Fried
has. Yeah, it's a little short one.
Bill, is this a good place to stop?
Yeah, this is a good place to stop, actually.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and let's pivot to the absolute word. The absolute word is based on Sunday messages appearing in the Daily Word, a copyrighted Unity publication, and has been used with permission. And this one comes from July 19th, 2020. The word is togetherness, and the affirmation I created is, I lavishly share love, peace, and joy from my divinity. Love, peace, and joy are useful aspects of my divinity. I treasure times of quiet and solitude. I also relish togetherness in the company of family, friends, and members of my spiritual community. Whether we are working, volunteering, praying, or simply enjoying one another's company, our shared experiences are opportunities for me to support those I care about, and in return, they support me. I enjoy and value togetherness throughout every season of my life's journey. During times of trial, hardship, or grief, being in the company of friends and family is comforting. I use it to keep myself strong. Likewise, during times of celebration, I use the company of others to multiply my joy. In times of togetherness, I lavishly share love, peace, and joy from my divinity. And what is really ironic about this has nothing to do with the absolute word. However, we have an example in this one that shows how powerful our subconscious mind is, because I have a word misspelled. The word is R, A-R-E, and I have it A-R-E-E. It's even underlined in red. In the hour or so I worked with tweaking this, I never saw it because the mind blocked the second E, and that was happening unconsciously. Mm-hmm. So there's lots of interesting unconscious things happening. And according to this document we've been working on, maybe even our free will. And so, which means 7 seconds ago, I decided that it's the end of the show. So goodbye, everybody. Thank you for listening. Goodbye, Bill. Goodbye, Cher.
Bye. Thank you.